Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I'm so excited today to interview Sylvia Paja. I don't know Sylvia very well, but I know her art and I love her art. And one of the challenges of being a radio host is you don't get to show people the beautiful objects that you yourself have seen. But if you want to check out Sylvia's art, I invite you to go down to the Swiftwater Gallery on Vashon or check her out online because she's also selling online and you can see beautiful examples. She's nodding her head no, but I have to tell you that if you go to Etsy, you are on. You should check yourself out. This is the new world.
What?
People are selling your art online.
Yeah, the used pieces, right.
The used pieces.
That's what my daughter told me.
Yeah. So we've just discovered something here. Sylvia's art is, the part of her art that I know are crystal, works of crystal that are sandblasted with designs often symbolic. And what I didn't know is that a lot of those symbols come from her heritage or her grandparents' heritage in Latvia. And I found that absolutely fascinating. In fact, I went online just to refresh my knowledge on Latvia, which I have to tell you is fairly minimal, but developing. And I read, traditional Latvian folk arts are notable for their deep connection to the country's ancient traditions, natural environment, and cultural identity. These arts are not only creative expressions, but also a reflection of Latvia's historical experiences and its people's deep-rooted connection to nature and folklore. And then they talk about the symbolism of some of the, they talk about the symbols. I love that because now when I go back and I look at your art, not only am I going to say, oh, this is a lovely piece, it's a lovely design, but I'm going to think, oh, there's something here that goes beyond just the graphic. It actually has a connection to a deep past. So if you don't mind, let me start there because here's what I know about Latvia. It was part of Russia, the Soviet Union, but it has this amazing history where they created the Singing Revolution. So I've seen an amazing documentary on the Singing Revolution. And I tell you, it will move your heart and show you the power of the arts because they created this peaceful revolution through bringing their voices together. And it's a beautiful country. So those are the pieces that I know about Latvia, except now I know about its folklore and the importance of symbols. Do you feel a connection to Latvia through your ancestors? And what's that connection like for you?
Well, my family, I'm the first born here in the States, in the United States. And we spoke Latvian at home and went to Latvian Lutheran Church and played on a Latvian volleyball team and went to Latvian summer camp and Latvian school and, you know, on Sundays and that sort of thing. So I was immersed in that culture because they were, after they escaped, when the communists took over, they escaped and they came here.
Your grandparents.
My grandparents and my parents too. They were in a refugee camp in Germany for 4 years after the war and then got sponsored to come here and went to Pittsburgh. And there were Latvians sort of pockets all over and they gathered together to try to form, you know, groups to save their culture and their language and find fellowship that way because they thought, well, we're never going back to Latvia again. And so
That's pretty close connection because it's not like your great-great way back their grandparents.
No.
The people that you knew had a very living connection to Latvia.
Exactly. And I had never been there until In the 90s, I was invited on an artist exchange, and I went to Latvia for the first time. And so it was very odd to go somewhere you'd never been before, but I knew the food and I knew the songs and I knew the language and I knew the culture. And it was just unusual to go someplace that you'd never been before, but you felt like it was home. So that was a very interesting experience.
That's beautiful. How did you, because you've used the symbology as part of your art, did you experience it differently after being on the ground there and feeling the role of folk arts when you were in Latvia?
The arts are were important also in this country. I mean, people were really saving the music and the arts. A lot of jewelers, a lot of ceramicists, a lot of fiber arts mm-hmm. all had the same old designs in them, you know, that were traditional. So when I went there, too, it had sort of atrophied a little bit because of the Soviet influence where they tried to Russify everyone. And so they weren't allowed to sing. They weren't allowed to paint and do their, you know, their traditional sort of things. It had to all be Soviet Union stuff. So that was still sort of present when I went to visit because it was right around Glasnost and it wasn't quite independent yet. So, but the arts were always very important. Like even in these Soviet concrete apartments that were so dismal, there would always be artwork. And it was one thing that impressed me when I was there was that folks would brag not about their daughter or son being a doctor or a lawyer. They'd say, "Oh, my daughter's a painter and my son is a jeweler." And you know, that was there was always artwork on the walls of these places that were quite dismal, really, otherwise. They really value the arts, which I really appreciated. That's one thing I came away with that was like,
it would be so moving to see that art isn't just about decorating your high-end apartment. It was a living part of the culture, and it actually helped them, in my words, keep their soul.
Exactly. And it's so funny because just yesterday I was hanging some pieces of art back on the wall after painting, and there was one painting that I got when I was there in the 90s. And it was how I got it was I saw this sweet little painting of this backlit church in this churchyard, and I just loved it. And I mentioned it to the host. The next thing I know, he's gone to the artist, asked them to paint something similar. They painted it on cardboard because they didn't really have the canvas. And he gave it to me, and I had to roll it up and stick it in my boot because you weren't allowed to take art out of the Soviet Union at that time. I smuggled out this painting on this piece of cardboard in a boot. Anyway, and I just was looking at that painting yesterday. And
That is amazing. And it's also, it belies the idea that the arts don't have power in times of social change, because they do, you know. And of course, their music, what a story that was, that they could sing sort of under the radar. They could sing their way to independence.
Yeah, yeah. They still have a song festival that celebrates all the old songs and contemporary songs, but there's a whole oral tradition of these dainas, which are these songs that have, that it was an oral tradition, and someone started kind of documenting them and writing them all down, and there's volumes and volumes of these
amazing
these songs.
were you already using the Latvian imagery when you went to Latvia on your residency?
Yeah, that's what I was basically doing mostly. Yeah, I was doing Latvian shows.
And how did you come to that? How did you decide to make that part of your art path?
You know, my grandfather was, he worked in copper, and he had a little workshop, and I would sit and watch him, and he would hammer Latvian designs into plates, copper plates, copper artifacts that he made, pieces of art. And I just knew at that time that I would do something with art, and that it was going to have something to do with the Latvian designs. And they were, the different designs have different meanings from their pagan religion, basically, which is just nature-based religion. And so the solstices are a big deal, and they're very agriculturally connected. And
I'm talking to Vashon artist Sylvia Paja about her beautiful sandblasted art with designs inspired by her Latvian heritage.
In fact, it's interesting that this small country with just a couple million people survived being taken over by the Germans, the Swedes, the, you know, the Russians, the Poles, you know, everyone came in, but they somehow kept their identity. And one of the reasons seems to be that connection to their place, which is beautiful agricultural rolling hills, you know.
It's a great story. Yeah. It's a great story. When you started using the Latvian symbols and you were choosing them for your art, were you looking for what worked graphically, or were you feeling yourself into what the symbols represented and bringing that back in?
I was looking at older designs from books like Soviet Union books, and at times because people would have these designs that were in jewelry or in fiber, you know, either knit, that big knitting mittens is a big deal in Latvia too, and weaving. And so I would sort of transpose those designs that had the elements of the sun and the tree of life and just various symbols in it. And I would, it would sort of depend on the shape of the object that I was putting on, because I like to put my pieces, my designs on usable things, pitchers, glasses, vases, things like that. So it was, yeah, I would think about the ultimate home for this piece, whether it was a gift for a newborn gift, you know, like a christening gift, or whether it was a wedding gift or something like that. So, yeah.
Interesting, because I think a lot about how people experience art, and I know that, you know, it's so easy to turn art into a commodity or a thing that you buy. And when an artist is working with any form of intuition, symbology, you wonder, do people take the time to really feel into what's in this piece? Or is it just something that you buy because it's a pretty picture, it looks good, and there's really nothing wrong with that. But I always feel like, what if there could be more? What if you could actually have a kind of living relationship with the art, because there was something that the artist was bringing? It was just a little bit more.
Yeah, that's why I think Latvians appreciate the Latvian designs and pieces of glass more than Americans do. They're Americans, it's just beautiful geometric design, but they don't understand the meaning. So there definitely is a meaning behind it, you know, and some of the symbols are feminine, some are masculine. And so, you know, people think about that when they buy their beer mugs or whatever.
That's so interesting. It's so interesting. Well, take me back in time. Were you always an artist? Did you always know that was going to be your path, or how did that work?
Yes, I have always been a maker. I've always done things with my hands. I've always built things, created things, just for fun. And you know, even as a child, I just really loved to make things. And so that's just, was just a given.
And your parents were go forth and create? They were?
You know, that's one thing I was also reflecting on before we were going to talk, was the fact that there's an artist that has support and has, you know, whether it's from your community, which I had a huge Latvian community that supported me, or your family. My parents were a great support in this. My grandparents had passed away already, but when I started doing this, but they were a great support and helped me, you know, get started, because I basically started with doing Latvian designs in glass and then doing different shows in different cities, and also having a mail order sort of people would order a wedding vase, you know, from Chicago or whatever. And so I would fill those orders by mailing them to them. So there was just that support that artists really need. And then Vashon is a perfect place for artists, because they get so much support. So yeah. I just realized how huge that is.
But it's, yeah, I think the family heritage, though, is where it all starts. And I've heard so many artist stories, especially people who are late to art, where they had an inclination and the father looked out and said, son, how are you going to make a living? Or don't you think you want to be a lawyer before you know, tackle this? And so they really, they either backpedal their art, they never get to it, or they waste years before they can start creating after sometimes a miserable career in law, you know, or sometimes a great one because they can also help pay the bills. But your family never put that on you.
No, and that's I've always appreciated that about my family.
Now, have you had to support yourself as an artist full time?
No, I've always had a day job. So I had to balance things out. And I would say that it wasn't so much balancing as juggling when I think about it. All the aspects of my life that I like to make, I mean, whether it was building a house or building a garden or creating meals out of the vegetables from the garden, those are all things I love to do. They're kind of hands-on doing kind of things, and that's what I've always liked. So I've had to kind of balance, but more juggle all these
different
things.
Juggle, that's a great word for it. And what was your day job?
I worked at a vet clinic at Fair Isle.
Oh, I saw that somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lovely environment as well.
Very much. Because
animals, in a sense, they move my heart kind of the way the heart, you know, art does as well. But I'm very interested in how people manage a creative life. And I'd say the compromises they make, but I love your word better, the juggling that they have to do. Because a lot of times people say, well, I can't because blah, 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 blah. But you say, no, actually the juggling is a creative art in and of itself.
And imperfect art. And of course, there's dropped balls.
Drop balls.
Yep, in juggling.
You add one too many and then you're out for a bit.
It's a practice. I just thought about that. I thought, well, it's not really balancing your life. It really is juggling. So, yeah.
Yeah. But to view it that way, I mean, I know professional jugglers and they're always stretching and they're always dropping balls. I mean, they can't advance as jugglers if they're not screwing up a lot of times and going, oh, that didn't work. Okay, I could try it this way. I could try it that way, which in a sense has a lot to do with design. Because designers are already, okay, here are my constraints, here are my constraints. This might work, this won't work, you know. Oops, that experiment didn't work. So I feel like juggling, design, and living a creative life have a lot in common.
Yeah, a lot of experimentation, you know. You're always learning. And I've taken different workshops, even though I've been doing this for almost 40 years. I still take workshops and I still find new ways of doing things, and I love that. So,
talk to me about community, because you mentioned Vashon and how supportive it's been supportive for artists and all. Because that's another piece. A lot of times creating art can be a kind of solitary thing, but having a community is part of the wind in your sails that allows you to keep going. So how important has community been for you, and in what ways?
So important. We live in a bubble, a lovely bubble that has just appreciates its artists so much. And just going to the VCA panel discussion with all the artists there talking about their...
Let's just take a sidebar, because not everyone who listens is going to know that's Vashon Center for the Arts. And an amazing presentation they did with four artists, it was, including Brian Fisher, who I've interviewed on this show. And they were talking about, what was the topic, like art, it becomes you or something
like
that?
Yes.
Yeah, and they were talking about their own path and really the role of art. So didn't want to interrupt, but not everybody's not going to.
Yeah, exactly. It was just wonderful to hear how other artists think and how they approach and how different we all are about how we do our art. And it was just such a perfect example of what this community is like. They really appreciate their artists, whether it's musicians or whether it's actors and arts, visual arts. You know, Viva is a great island visual artist.
It's just
they do the arts tours, and it's just so it gives you energy. It gives you the strength you need to sort of keep going. Sometimes you need a little motivation, exterior motivation. You can have some interior motivation, but sometimes that gets a little weak, and it's just great to see other people doing what they love. I love to see people passionate about.
Yeah, the joy and the passion begets joy and passion. And I think it can also help us through the rough spots where you go, oh my God, this didn't sell. Have you had an experience with this? Or I'm feeling really flat and I don't know what to create. And realizing, welcome to the party.
Exactly.
Welcome to the life. You know, the thing I love, and this is new for me, but having joined Vashon Island Visual Artists this year, I always thought, oh my God, I have to be knighted to be able to be a Vashon Island artist. And to say, no, these are regular people. They're terribly nice. nobody is walking around with a halo and, you know, a stick and saying, no, you're not part of the clan. You know, it felt like a very helping, nurturing community.
Exactly. That's it. It's unpretentious. They're just real people who are just doing these amazing things.
Yeah.
And you just see them in Thriftway and, you know, I feel like not taking yourself too seriously is helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, you say about Thriftway, and I love it on Vashon, because while there are some artists who are have full-time careers as artists and have done quite well, there are also a number who are checkers at Thriftway. And they figured that their juggling is to have a day job that pays, you know, the rent or the mortgage, doesn't zap their minds, that leaves them with time or energy to do something else. So it's very respectful. You know, you don't feel like, oh, only the artistes get to call themselves artists and the rest are just whatever. No, it's your checker. You know,
absolutely.
I love that.
Yep, everywhere.
I totally love that.
Art is everywhere.
Art is everywhere. But don't you feel like in this culture, maybe because you've been on Vashon so long, you don't, but in this culture, there can be those kinds of messages around art that only certain people get to create, and you have to do before you can call yourself artist. And if you're not successful selling, you don't get to call yourself artist. Have you experienced that? Maybe not for yourself, but in the culture?
Yes, because I feel I used to feel that there was a game, you know, with galleries and sales and prestige and that sort of thing. And I feel actually that the internet's helped people become more independent of that sort of game, and you can be who you are and you can have a following because you don't have to depend on someone to promote you. That's- and they promote you because you make them money. So yeah, I feel like you don't, yeah, I kind of lost my thought there, but
no, but I think it's totally right, because and it's the same way in a sense with independent authorship too, that the obvious channels, which for art could be a gallery and for a writer could be a publisher, those are restricted and they're limited and there are only so many and they're not enough to go around. But when you say, there are a lot of other ways to get your work out, then the sky's the limit. You know, and if you're creative and willing to do the work, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
But I think it's so funny that you said, oh, I don't have an Etsy store, even though you are famous on Etsy.
I'll have to look.
Yeah, I was drooling because there's a blue vase that was one of your works from maybe 20 years ago. Oh. That looks just gorgeous. And someone says, this is one of her special blue ones. You know, I go, oh, that's so nice.
Well, that's so funny. I don't have a website. I'm not there. So I just,
were you not tempted, or it was just too much in terms of
too much? You know, the pressure to create things. I sort of have two tiers. You know, I have one tier of pieces that are sort of more everyday, more affordable, more, you know, things that people can use every day.
And then my husband can afford to buy me.
Exactly. And then there's things that are more one of a kind and more, take more energy and time, and they're more expensive. So I don't want to get stuck in either one of those places, really. You know, I like to be back and forth and also do things that are a little more frivolous, or not frivolous, just more, less serious. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just get too serious about what you do. And sometimes just playing around is fun too. So that's what I like to do as well.
Yeah. 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 And you have you are quite a part of Swiftwater, the gallery in downtown Vashon. So you have representation there and you're part of the co-op. So your work gets out and gets seen, and you get to make choices, because maintaining your own shop and maintaining a website, that's a lot of work, and that takes away from the other things that you might be doing. Yeah. Do you have kids?
I do. I have two daughters, both who are, one's a visual artist and one is a musician. So,
oh my.
They're in the arts themselves.
Did you encourage them, or did they just see you and find their own way?
They were wired that way. You know, one was definitely musical and one was definitely visual arts from childhood. So I just let them go and tried to encourage them.
Did they come to you for any advice, or have you given them any advice over the years?
a little in the visual arts department. I am not a musician, so I just appreciate music, but I can't play anything. So I've just been a supporter of that. It's great to have that kind of passion about things. But it is, again, a juggling act. So
what would you say to a young artist or musician, but let's go focus on artists who are, say, mid-20s, and they're passionate about making art, but not sure how they're going to make their way in the world. What kind of advice or tips might you give them?
That is a good question. It is helpful if you can sell your art. I find that actually doing some shows where you're actually present, so almost like craft shows, is a great form of market research, really. You can see in real time how people react to different pieces. You know, I've found that some things that I thought were really cool, people totally ignored, and they liked these other pieces much better. And so I find that that is helpful in terms of selling. And just trying to stay true to yourself and true to what you're passionate about. And you'll find a niche. You know, finding a niche is another thing.
How would you advise them to walk the tightrope between needing to sell in order to make a living, but also needing to keep your own spirit alive and keep your own soul connection to your art and your own willingness to follow your dream and not just do what the market wants? Any advice on managing the balance between the two?
You know, one thing I told my daughter and I came up with was to have, she's a printmaker, and she would have original prints that were framed in beautiful frames. That was one tier. And then below that, there was just matted art that was not framed, that was a little less expensive. And then below that, there were cards that were the same pieces, but on a card, right? And so I feel like if you have different options for people that can still buy your art, even if it's just a card, you know.
I think that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant because I know for myself, when I go on the studio tour, you know, twice a year and see the wonderful art that's created on Vashon, I sometimes feel bad because I go, I don't really have space on my walls, and my budget's probably not going to spend several hundred dollars, but I love this, so I get to take away something. But it's small and it's probably printed rather than original, you know, but it's still something. So I think about that.
Yeah, I think that that's a way to sort of have your art available to more people.
Right.
Different.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with me about your artistic path or discoveries along the way?
I think that constant growing is a good thing. And trying not to be too serious and spending a little more time playing in your studio is probably a good
play
advice, which I need to follow myself.
Yeah, I think play is like the safe, the home base you can come back to and say, if I play, I can find myself again. You know, I can let go of the market and the sales and stuff and sort of refill the tank by playing and all. Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 70.
Oh, great. Yeah. And you're going strong, which is lovely. How has getting older freed you, if it has?
Well, it has, because I actually have now retired I've been trying to retire over the last 3 years, but I've completed it, I think. And that hopefully makes me a little more open to working on all those projects and ideas that I have in the back of my head and in the back of my little spiral notebook in my studio. And that's what I'm going to work on is basically, but again, you have a little less energy available to do the juggling. So, and you have to pick and choose a little better in terms of what I can do and what I'm going to be able to do now and what I won't be able to do later and go for it.
Yeah. It's kind of paradoxical because on the one hand, we don't have all the time in the world. We can't do all the projects or even learn all the things. But I don't know about you, but I think we have this golden gift called don't have to prove it anymore.
Yeah, bingo.
and that is so, I think that's what partly kept me out of art. because the fear of being seen as lesser than was pretty tough. And so to be able to say, frankly, you know, I don't know if I have 1 year or 20 years. Does it really matter?
Yeah, exactly. You don't care what people think anymore. That is a freeing thing.
Totally. Not in the same way. I'm not totally immune, you know.
Oh, yeah. And you're so vulnerable when you do your art. You're out there and you put it out there and either it touches people or it doesn't, you know.
Right.
And you just have to let go of that. But yeah, you definitely don't have to worry so much about.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
You know who you are, and your identity and your worth isn't necessarily tied to your production. Mm-hmm. Although I was thinking as you were saying that, it's also nice to have the cloak of community. So when you do have those slip-ups and somebody rolls their eyes at your art or says it's too expensive or whatever it might be, you can go talk to somebody who would understand.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's so nice. Well, thank you so much. I have enjoyed our interactions, you know, over time, and I wanted to know more about your background, and now I know why I did, because I think your art is beautiful, but I also love knowing something of the history and the richness of culture that is infusing your art at the same time. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.